Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
This is Nate and Charlie, Liberty at Night on the Free Talk Live Network, coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. We're going to talk about Painkiller, this new docuseries on Netflix. I don't know if you've seen it. We both watched it. I've now seen it a couple times because it's that good. Why are we talking about Painkiller, one of the most difficult and heart-wrenching shows I've ever watched on Netflix?
I thought Matthew Broderick did a good job.
He did.
Yeah.
Taylor Kitsch, I think is his name, the guy that was in Lone Survivor.
Yeah.
He did a really good job. Really great show if you haven't
seen it. I thought the girl from Orange and New Black did a good job.
Yeah.
Although it's not really historically accurate, but I thought she did.
We can mention that.
Her acting was good.
If you haven't seen Painkiller, there's probably some spoilers, although this is a historical event. The only spoilers you would get is if we mention a lead character and whether or not they survive the entire show. Everything else is public knowledge. Okay, we already know that. So if you're worried about spoilers for fictional characters that don't exist in real life and whether or not they're going to survive the show,
put your earmuffs on.
Yeah, then maybe earmuffs for this. Why is this connected to a white pill? It's connected to a white pill because the Supreme Court recently, in the last few weeks, blocked the $6 billion opioid settlement. And this settlement, this bankruptcy settlement for Purdue Pharma, would have given the Sackler family immunity. It would have given them immunity for what happened with the opioid crisis, what's going on right now. Now, we don't spend a lot of time talking about evil corporations and evil capitalists and how they should be criminally liable for things or even financially liable for things. We typically come on the side of it's not their fault. It's the customers or it's the government or it's the whatever. After looking into this a little bit, and yes, I did just watch the show, I can tell you I think the Sackler family should die in prison.
Yeah.
And I think all of their money should be taken away and given to the families.
And it wasn't because they created the drug. It wasn't because they sold the drug. It wasn't because doctors wrote prescriptions or whatever. And it's not because people don't need pain medicine. The real crux of this is, and why I believe that they're evil, is you do have over a million people that have died of opioid overdose. And it's the way in which they pushed the drug to create incentives for doctors to increase dosage to make more money.
That process, I don't even think is the criminal part of it. I think it's the lying about it.
Right.
I think it's so when we talk about this,
that goes hand in hand. So they lied about what the actual effects could potentially be to increase dosage to make more money.
Yes. My initial reaction to Charlie when he talked to me about this show, and people I know have had the exact same reaction, is, people know better. They shouldn't get hooked on opioids. We all know that they're addictive and that's, that's on you. I get it. They're probably evil people running the company, but at the end of the day, it's personal responsibility and it's on the people who choose to go down this path and people get addicted to drugs and that's the way it works out sometimes. But is it really their fault? In this case specifically, they lied about knowing whether or not it was addictive.
In cahoots with the FDA, by the way.
With the FDA. So we do still have the ability to blame the government in the scenario. I did do a little bit of digging on the FDA official who approved it, Curtis Wright. Initially did not get approved, and they had to do a little bit of work on him.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what work they did on him.
The only thing we know is they spent 3 days in a hotel with him.
Yes. And magically, he refused to approve the drug a few times, and then they took him to a hotel room for a few days, and after that, he approved the drug.
Then
a year later, he went to work for Purdue Pharma.
Making a lot of money.
So
that's so weird.
No,
what
telling.
A coincidence.
No telling what happened.
What a freaking coincidence.
I probably just played him testimonials of people that were in pain and needed this medication because they were in pain. Or they pulled an Epstein Island on him, which is what I think happened.
That's what I think, too.
We have we don't know what happened, but the FDA did eventually approve this. And that's where the libertarian part of the solution starts to come in, because it is the government that put their stamp of approval on this and allowed them to tell people that it was believed to not be addictive or be far less addictive than all of the other opioids that were out there on the market.
They also approved it for moderate pain.
Yes. You know, you got a migraine.
Yeah.
You know, take some.
I know someone. Okay. One day I'm going to tell my whole story, but today's not that day. But just so you know, this hits close to home for me, which is why I was so invested in it and why it affected me the way that it did. I had talked to some people that I know in the industry, and one person told me that they had, you know, taken over a clinic for this doctor, and this doctor was incentivized to prescribe Oxycontin or oxycodone or whatever in the Oxy family, and was even given it to like 17-year-old girls who had sprained their ankle.
Yeah.
And then now that 17-year-old girl is, I don't know, in her 20s probably, and is addicted because of an ankle sprain.
Yeah.
And so that to me is the insanity of this. But the doctors made more money by writing those prescriptions. Now, there's a whole drug pharma thing out there. Their incentive is to get the doctors to prescribe these things. When you have that type of incentive for a medical professional to prescribe an opiate for an ankle sprain. So anyway, when I watched it, it's to me, it's those types of things. It's not that the drug was created. It's not that people take it. And it's not that those types of things happen. It's the way in which they lied as an incentive to make as much money as possible, knowing that it would destroy people and their families.
And
that's the most heartbreaking part of all of this.
So if you want to separate out like the personal responsibility side of it, because I was talking to someone about it who had the personal responsibility reaction, as I did the first time I responded to Charlie about it. If you take it back to like 1995, well, the people who were originally being told, oh, hey, there's this new drug on the market. It's less than 1% addictive.
Makes you feel great.
You know, makes you feel great, works way better and everything, lasts for 12 hours, and that's why it's not addictive. And so it's pretty safe to prescribe to everyone. And the patients are like, okay, well, you know, it's even if you're a personally responsible, you know, you're a personally responsible individual, okay, and you don't want to get addicted to stuff, and your doctor tells you that this is something that's not addictive, because that's also what they've been told by the drug reps from Purdue. Well, then you kind of do remove a lot of your responsibility in that scenario. Now, it's currently 2023, and anyone who sprains their ankle and goes in and someone says, okay, well, let me set you up with 20 days worth of Oxycontin. First off, your doctor's probably going to lose their practice if they're going to do that nowadays. But anyone who goes in, acts like they don't know that it's a super addictive substance, they're wrong. You can do enough research. It is widely known that it is addictive. And so you need to be very careful with these things. But back in the day when it was first released, I kind of don't blame a lot of those initial patients.
Even 10 years ago, people didn't really know. Some people did, but it wasn't as public as it is now. And now,
well, they had their first congressional hearings in 2001 over this whole thing.
But remember, you know, they all passed it, basically. They were like, oh, okay, everything's fine, you know?
So when it comes to a libertarian conversation on this, and then I guess some of the white pill about it is what the Supreme Court just did, this didn't get approved automatically because they had not done testing on whether or not it was addictive. That's why it wasn't getting approved. It eventually got approved with no more testing. They didn't have to do anything else. We don't know exactly why it got approved. The blame, a lot of the blame, yes, goes on the people who made it, who knew what they were doing. A lot of it also goes on the FDA, who are the people in the government that we have trusted to look into these things for us and put their stamp of approval to allow them to be sold. Now, as libertarians, we don't even think there should be an FDA. All right. So that's a weird argument to make. Mm-hmm. But I also would like people to study drugs and approve them, put their seal of approval. And like you mentioned earlier, GML puts their stamp of approval on something. Well, that means something to me. You know, now what happens if GML puts their stamp of approval on something, says it's not addictive, and then it turns out, you know, within 7 or 8 years later, oh, this is wildly addictive for almost everyone who takes it for a certain amount of time. That whole GML stamp of approval thing means basically nothing.
And the thing about that being in the private market is you would have a way to take action against that.
You would.
Because the crime that's still going to be committed in this is that the FDA is going to hold no responsibility whatsoever.
No.
Even though they put their stamp of approval on it. With the language, they helped, literally helped them craft the language about it not being addictive.
I was listening to a Rogan
interview. Nothing's going to happen to them.
A Joe Rogan
the FDA
interview.
Is just going to keep going.
This Rogan interview was from about a year ago. And maybe it wasn't the Rogan interview. It was another, I was watching some doctor's channel on YouTube. They were talking to someone who had done a Freedom of Information Act request with the FDA trying to get Curtis Wright's emails and correspondence, and they said that they had been lost. They didn't have any of his correspondence with Purdue Pharma.
Interesting.
It's weird how things like that happen.
Was it with Clinton's emails?
Maybe it's on a private server somewhere.
Okay.
The problem here is that the organization that we trust to approve these drugs fails time and time again.
Well, we don't trust
them. They can get bought off easily. They can be promised a job, make them three times their government salary if they come work for them next year. And then they just keep going. We still just use the FDA to approve these drugs. Whereas if there were a private market of drug approval or drug recommendation, whatever it may be, you have a brand name associated with this that you want to protect. And our GML stamp of approval, if we approve something and it turns out that there was something shady that happened and we fudged the numbers or they fudged them and we were okay with this, then we lose all of our brand credibility and
we're done. Should be allowed to take action against you.
Yeah. Or we're just done. Like we no longer, no one calls us to approve their drugs anymore. Our business is done because no one trusts our name on their product anymore. And so we, even before whether or not there's any action taken against us, we have an incentive to not let that happen because we want our brand on the box to mean something.
Right.
When we do.
And it doesn't mean that this type of solution is going to prevent things like this from happening. We live in a world that isn't perfect. It'll never be perfect. But maybe only 100,000 people would have had to die before this would have blown up. You know, and then that way, look, you saved 900,000 lives.
Or maybe they would have had to do more studies to show whether or not it was addictive. They would have seen that it was wildly addictive, and it would have never been used for that kind of prescription in the first place.
Yes.
That's the other thing that could have happened. And that was the FDA's job.
Yes.
To stop that from happening. Because, yes, evil people exist that just want to come in and make money. They're supposed to be the ones that stop this. And they're going to have no liability for it.
Yeah.
Now, who does end up having liability for it is Purdue. And there is a story here from CNN. They did get a $6 billion settlement in their bankruptcy settlement,
which is up from $4.5 billion because it was $4.5 billion.
I think $6 billion might include some assets and stuff like that. Yeah. I think the cash was $4.5 billion. Maybe it's up to $6 billion. I don't know. Anyway, total $6 billion. And in this bankruptcy settlement, they're basically removed from any future liability.
Yeah, they somehow put immunity inside of that
in a bankruptcy filing. Mm-hmm. They got criminal immunity in a bankruptcy filing. And so the Supreme Court has blocked this settlement and is now looking at, I think they're going to, is it September? Is it this month that people are supposed to start coming and presenting the case to them? I can't remember. Maybe I took that part out. But we might see that this family is still going to be held liable in some way, because maybe the Supreme Court is going to decide that you can't just file bankruptcy and remove yourself from any sort of criminal liability in something. And this is a rare occasion where, like, if you knowingly lied about something and knew that it was going to be addictive and you lied about it, needs to be something.
It's like, imagine I sell you a car that has no brakes, but I tell you that it has brakes.
Yeah.
You know, and then you die or get severely injured. Like, who's responsible for that?
They could say, maybe I should test the brakes before it. But you sold me the car. We were parked on a hill in San Francisco, and I bought it from you. And by the time I tested the brakes, it was too long. It was too late.
Yeah.
I couldn't stop.
Right.
That was it.
Yeah.
So.
And I do think, you know, one of the things we talk about with personal responsibility is ultimately, like, I do think that even if you trust someone, you should still take the personal responsibility. But that doesn't mean that it absolves the other person of their responsibility not to knowingly harm someone else.
Yeah.
And that to me is a libertarian position, that you own yourself, you're responsible for yourself, but also your rights end where another's begin, and you can't knowingly and willingly hurt someone and take their stuff.
Now I'm going to tie another, what I'm still going to call a white pill, into this, because we're talking about OxyContin, which is being prescribed for pain. All right. And there are other things that people use for pain in some states. All right. Those states that have been willing to defy the federal government and say that they're going to use it anyway. And that thing is marijuana. Now, I think that people are a little bit wrong about their feelings on marijuana. I don't think it's something that you can just smoke as much as you possibly can, and you're never going to have any side effects your entire life.
Yeah.
And this is why I found the white pill in this, because anytime I talk about marijuana, the first thing I say is that we need more research on it. And it's very hard to do research on marijuana when it's a Schedule One narcotic and you got to get approval from the DEA, and
which they won't give.
Essentially impossible to do legit clinical trials with it, because one issue I've always had is that your general, I'll say stoner, but I don't mean it in a negative context, okay, but your general marijuana stoner would tell you something like this, like, oh, you can do as much of this stuff as you want to, and it's never going to, what are we talking about? They'll tell you something like that.
Did you hear that? That guitar sounds so good.
I think that they are wildly wrong about this, and I want the data on this, and the Department of Health and Human Services.
Why? How do you know? How do you know that they're wrong about it?
Listen, as a libertarian, I think it's best to conduct your own studies when the government won't allow you to do it. Okay, and I know people, all right? I know a guy. And HHS has formally recommended that it is moved from Schedule 1, which is an insane schedule for a plant.
Yeah. On the same level as opiates.
How did they come along and schedule a plant at Schedule 1?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Down to schedule.
Well, I mean, opiates come from poppy. That's a plant too. Although they have to do a lot.
Yeah,
too.
You got to do a lot of stuff. We're not just snorting poppy over here, you know,
or drinking milk of poppy.
They've officially recommended that it be moved from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3, and now that's not what needs to happen. They need to recommend that it be made fully legal or decriminalized completely, because it's a plant. And people should be able to do what they want to their own bodies with this natural substance. And if you go down that road, I mean, that's up to you, I guess. Just get all the knowledge that you can before you do it. And the problem is we haven't been able to get all the knowledge that we can because the government's been blocking people from getting the knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But this move could actually change that. This from marijuanamoment.net, one of the first websites I check in the morning when I wake up.
Actually, you get their email updates.
Yeah, they send me stuff. Text updates, actually. If the U.S. government moves marijuana to Schedule 3 of the Controlled Substance Act, as the Department of Health and Human Services has now formally recommended, the shift could have profound implications for all sorts of cannabis-related issues, ranging from research to business taxes to U.S. Postal Service mailing rules. In the aftermath of the HHS announcement, some of the proposals' would-be consequences are clearer than others. For instance, it's evident that cannabis businesses could, for the first time, claim standard business deductions on their federal tax returns, freed from the restrictions of the IRS tax code, Section 280E, but other matters, such as what exactly the shifts would mean for federal workers, are still a bit murky. So one thing, there are all these cannabis businesses out there. First off, they can't really deal with banks because they're dealing with something that's federally prohibited. They can't they can't use standard business deductions when they're filing taxes because you can't deduct for a business selling something that's federally illegal for you to sell. It's been really tough on them to,
another way is to go through the banks.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, who do you bank with?
So this would not make it legal under federal law. We know that regardless of whether they comply with their own state law. Schedule 3, which includes ketamine. Whatever, however you want to say it. Okay. Oh, listen, how long has it been since you watched Armageddon? Okay. One toxicology report revealed ketamine, which is a, come on.
Which is a horse tranquilizer.
Steroids and Tylenol with codeine. So still highly regulated and not permitted to be sold without a DEA license or used by consumers with a doctor's prescription or other authorization. While medical marijuana might become broadly legal if the change goes through, most states would need to overhaul their systems in order to strictly align. So they talk about taxes and banking. We already mentioned some of those things. The research part is what I'm most interested in. Rescheduling would mean sweeping changes for cannabis research, removing many of the barriers to obtaining and using cannabis for scientific investigation. Key's Senate committee recently noted that the drug Schedule 1 designation means scientists face limited access to sources of marijuana, further hobbling research. And this is just the thing that I want so much. And why am I tying this into the painkiller thing? Because I think that we might have a natural alternative to some of this crazy, synthetic, addictive, murderous nonsense that people have been taking that has been held off of the market, once again, by the government, who also approve the other stuff that's killing a bunch of people and will not allow people to do this stuff, which I will admit, like, okay,
it's not just killing a bunch of people, it's affecting
and millions destroying more. Destroying families at the same time, crime, all kinds of stuff, you know? And we have this thing, which is pretty good at alleviating pain, both physical and psychological.
It looks like it wants to give you a high five.
It looks happy.
Yeah.
You know, it looks like a happy plant. Okay. Here's the other thing. So Nate just said they won't legalize it because Big Pharma would lose big time. And I think that that's been one of the main drivers. But what is mentioned in this article is that moving it to Schedule 3 might mean that Big Pharma is about to get in the weed business. And so while I'm not...
probably already are.
And I think that they might be the ones pulling some of the strings to get this moved.
To the tampon 500?
Because of the opioid thing. And I think they are moving this to Schedule 3 so they can now get into the weed business.
What a coincidence. Nate,
but
that's all just circumstantial evidence.
I know.
How can you follow that path, you know, to think that somehow this is calculated, all right?
Oh, I hate to be that cynical about everything, but after years of reading through all this stuff, you know, all right, coming up, we're going to talk through some of the dumbest things from last week, a bunch of tweets, a bunch of crazy news stories. That's something that we do all the time, every single week on Dumb Bleep of the Week. If you want to listen to us on Good Morning Liberty on your favorite podcast app. Right now, we are Liberty at Night on the Free Talk Live Network.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
USA News Update. Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy is announcing the next steps in a possible impeachment of President Joe Biden. Reporters pressed Republican Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell about that.
I'm going to say it again. I don't think Leader McCarthy, Speaker McCarthy, needs any advice from the Senate on how to run the House.
Key budget discussions are underway, and lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are saying another continuing resolution is likely. E-commerce prices are falling.
Online shopping prices have dropped, indicating a potential easing of inflation. According to Adobe Analytics, e-commerce prices saw a 3.2% year-over-year decline in August, the most significant decrease in over 3 years. Among the categories experiencing the most significant price reductions are sporting goods, appliances, and electronics. I'm John Schaefer.
I'm Ryan Daniels, USA News.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. That's 800-507-3137.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
Liberty Night with Nate and Chuck. We are back, and this is a clip from our weekly Don't Believe of the Week on our podcast, Good Morning Liberty. We did this one remote. I was in Denver at the time that we recorded this, but it was still a great episode. We talked about some really funny stuff, and you might notice that it's done over the interwebs instead of in our studio in Nashville. But anyway, let's get right into that.
I don't know if you've seen anything about this, Chuck. The situation with Elon Musk and Starlink in Ukraine. So this thing has been blown up over the last couple of days. The report came out that Ukraine was about to drone bomb Russia's Navy that was at anchor. And Elon Musk secretly ordered for Starlink to be deactivated in that area. I think they did give him enough credit to say that he was trying to avert a nuclear war. Now, it seems to be a little bit different. Elon is saying that he did not order for it to be turned off. He's saying that it was actually never on and that they requested for him to turn it on. The rhetoric over this has been pretty ridiculous. So Elon Musk said there was an emergency request from the government authorities to activate Starlink all the way to Sevastopol. The obvious intent being to sink most of the Russian fleet at anchor. If I had agreed to their request, then SpaceX would be explicitly complicit in a major act of war and conflict escalation. I think he's definitely right to not want to get Starlink involved in actual drone bombing the Russian fleet. And I believe from the very beginning, he said that it was just for communications, but it was not to be used for actual military strikes, that he didn't want it to be involved that way. And it's also for the Ukrainian people to be able to keep up communication.
Also, imagine thinking you have a right to something that didn't even exist 10 years ago.
Yeah. So that's going to be important in the next tweet after this one. Brianna Wu said, a billionaire undermining the national security policy of the United States. Normal people would go to prison for this. This has been a very common thing that people are saying, that basically Elon is aiding and abetting an enemy of the United States. Okay, George Takei says, the Daily Beast is reporting that Elon Musk ordered engineers to switch off his Starlink satellites just as Ukraine was preparing to attack the Russian naval fleet with drones. He said he feared nuclear retaliation by Russia. Here's the fun part. It's high time we ask the question, how much power and influence does it make sense to hand just one person? I think that we should address the fact that Elon Musk feared nuclear retaliation by Russia. And what if he is right or was right in this situation and the entire planet was destroyed because he allowed this attack to happen?
Somehow he's a bad person to want to stave off the end of humanity.
McDad in here said, like the power of the president, how much power and influence does it make sense to hand just one person? It's funny how it never applies to people in the government, right? Also, Charlie, I don't know if you know this, he wasn't handed this power. He created a company through SpaceX called Starlink. They've put up 5,000 satellites, and they're providing internet all around the world. And then when Ukraine was invaded by Russia, Starlink and Elon Musk decided to give them Starlink terminals so they could stay in communication. Some of the terminals were purchased. I think they're not charging like the subscriptions and stuff for the terminals. So we decided to help provide this to Ukraine. So in what way, Charles, in Nashville, Tennessee, would you say we handed this power and influence over the Ukraine-Russia conflict to Elon Musk?
Yeah, so first of all, he gave it away, basically, as you said. And then somehow now he owes them.
Yeah.
To keep it going.
Makes a lot of sense.
You know, when you give a gift to someone and there's other things that can be done with that gift, like it's now your responsibility since you gave the gift, you know, to keep doing that for that person. That makes total sense, right?
Definitely.
And Paul here says, I have days like this too. Mm-hmm. Right now I'm feeling pretty optimistic because I default to optimism. But Paul says, I used to believe we could turn things around. I'm more and more rooting for the collapse.
I feel that way quite a bit. I'm not really rooting for the collapse, but I have that attitude or that feeling about things pretty often, actually. I'm not rooting for the collapse, but I do have a hard time actually seeing how it's not going to happen.
Part of you is like, okay, if we just get the collapse over with, we could start the rebuild, even though it's going to be terrible for, you know, maybe the rest of our lives, but maybe our children or our children's children will have something decent.
But there's no guarantee that the rebuild is going to be rebuilt in the original American constitutional governance or even anything with more freedom than that. Like,
unless we pass the rebuild, reback, rebetter plan.
The rebuild back also
rebuild,
better.
Reback, rebetter. Uh-huh.
Let's make fun of some climate people real quick. This is when the hurricane was going through Florida.
Climate Defiance says, as we write Florida, as we write, they need a comma there. As we write Florida, are they sending letters to Florida?
They are currently writing
thank
Florida.
You notes. What's
the whole, is it the whole state?
I think what they meant to say was, as we write, like as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
Florida is getting battered. 30 counties have issued evacuation orders. Roads have been turned into rivers. Vehicles flipped. Homes flooded. Delicately assembled lives upended with disarray and despair. How can this go on? The scariest environment imaginable is what was happening in Florida. Scariest environment imaginable.
What they have fully morphed into is any time the weather is bad, they officially say that this is climate change. And this is a great example because Florida had a Category 4 hurricane. Not an unheard of event, Charlie.
No, I think this is the first time a hurricane has ever struck the United States.
Yeah, and that's because of climate change.
That's what it sounds like when you read this tweet. Yeah.
Like,
so this has never happened in the history of Earth ever. It's the first cyclone coming off the ocean to hit Florida.
Never happens.
It's ridiculous.
And so therefore we need to give the government more money and then they will never have the opportunity to post about a hurricane in Florida again.
So back to the comment earlier about, you know, wanting to see the collapse. What if instead of, you know, wanting to see the collapse, we just give, you know, the woke left and climate, whatever, all of these alarmists, just let's give them what they want with the caveat that, you know, you have whatever, 5 years. And if everything you've demanded, we're going to give that to you. And if things don't change in 5 years, then you have to go away.
They would just say that they needed 6 years. Hey, explain this tweet thread here from Nina Turner.
All right, so Nina Turner tweeted this statement that says only free. And I think this might be from somebody we recognize, but that, you know, our name was blacked out. Or I say our, the person or entity's name was blacked out because Nina doesn't want to give anybody credit anymore. They said only free competitive markets can provide these things in a high quality, affordable manner with good service. The greater the government interference, the worse overall combo of quality, service, and price. And that was in response to her saying everyone deserves the dignity of living, of a living wage, safe housing, and health care. Everyone deserves. And so she quote tweets this and says, free markets always become non-competitive. They made a board game about this. And she's referring to Monopoly.
I really like that her evidence for how free markets always become non-competitive is a board game called Monopoly. Like, that's exactly what her economic theory is coming from, is the fact that there is a board game that has a fixed amount of spaces on it and a set amount of rules called Monopoly. And that is Nina Turner's understanding of free market economics.
Yep. And by the way, you guys know the only way a monopoly can actually exist is if they have the assistance of someone who has the authority and free range use of violence against other people with no consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way that you can compel people to not start a business against you as if you have other people that either make it really difficult or actually tell you, no, you can't.
There's been a lot of people that have done a lot of great content on this, but when you look at the early 1900s or the late 1800s, and people will point to Vanderbilt, Rockefeller, Carnegie, all of these people, and they'll say, well, that's what happens when we have a totally unregulated free market. But if you actually go back and you look at what was going on during those times, they were heavily using the government to restrict people that wanted to compete with them. They were some of the first people that were using the government to hold out their competition. And so even those were still aided by government regulations and government power and control. I have a hard time thinking of an actual monopoly that has developed without using government coercion to restrict their competition. And the thing is, if you're not using government coercion, you can't have the monopoly for long because competition will come into the market. If you're going to raise your prices up, well, you're going to entice competitors to come in. If you're price gouging, you're charging too high a price, or your margins are way too fat, well, someone else can come in and charge lower margins and still make good money. That's actually what happened in the late 1800s and early 1900s as well. There's like no evidence of this idea that people are going to come in and destroy all their competition and then jack up their prices way high and charge people way too high money. Walmart gets blamed for putting people out of business, but it's just because they keep their prices really low. They never tell me the Walmarts that have gone and jacked up their prices by 300% now that all the mom and pop shops went out of business.
Or the Walmart cops show up to the mom and pop stores and like force them out.
Nina Turner's argument is that there is a board game called Monopoly, that's why we have to have government regulations. I'm going to skip over to Elizabeth Warren here. I guess this is number four. There's this new push, and some people might think this is a great idea, this new push for the IRS to allow this free tax filing tool. And so you'll be able to go to the IRS's website, and you can use this free tax filing tool, I guess. Now, what's interesting is I don't think that means it'll do your state taxes. I think it's just going to be federal. And then the funny part about that is that I never have to pay for federal taxes to be filed. It's always the state taxes they charge you for. And there are no state taxes in Tennessee. So we're fine when it comes to that. But anyway, anyway, she wants the IRS to create this tax filing tool that's going to be free, paid for with your tax dollars, which means it's free. And she says the average American spends $140 filing their taxes. But next year, the IRS will finally start piloting a free tax filing tool. Of course, big tax prep companies want to stop it, but our government shouldn't work for them. And I'm working to get this plan over the finish line. Okay, there's one big glaring problem I saw with this, and that is that the demon here is that Americans spend $140 filing their taxes. It's not the taxes, which you have no choice in the matter of and are likely much, much more than $140 for you to file. But of course, the enemy here, the evil entity, are the tax prep companies, which charge you for paying your theft to the U.S. government. And so that's an annoying one. And now what a lot of people are talking about is that eventually they're just going to, Charlie, we've mentioned a bunch of times that why don't they just tell you how much you owe? That way there's no confusion about it, right? Like the more, we lost Charlie. I don't know. He's gone.
Sorry, I had to send something. Go ahead.
We've talked a lot about how why don't they just tell you how much you owe? That way there's no confusion about it. We don't have to worry about getting fees or getting arrested or, you know, you owe the money and you find out several years later and you get in a bunch of trouble. Why don't they just tell us? I'm not a fan of that the more I think about it, because that means they'll have to have unprecedented access to all of your information, all of your income information. Not that they don't already have access to it, but imagine the mechanism to where the IRS could tell you exactly what you owe. What amount of privacy would they have to constantly violate of yours for them to tell you exactly what you owe? So that actually sounds pretty bad. And I like Costco's idea. He says, what if we just get rid of taxes? I think that's a good way. And I don't know if Elizabeth Warren just hasn't thought about this, but if you're worried about Americans spending $140 filing their taxes, and then you want to use taxpayer money to create a free tax filing tool, you could skip that whole process by just not having the taxes. And then we'd save a bunch of money. Did you hear about this Enrique Tarrio being sentenced to 22 years in prison? The guy who was running the Proud Boys?
No.
Yeah. He got the longest sentence out of all the Proud Boys. Here's the kicker, Charlie. He wasn't even there on January 6th.
He organized it.
Yes.
He was the mastermind.
He was the mastermind.
He was the one that suggested taking a flagpole. You know?
On top of that, he was an FBI informant. And he gets 22 years. So maybe he deserves it for being an FBI informant. I don't know. Mm-hmm. This situation, it's four or five of these guys that have been charged and given pretty crazy sentences right now. Carl said, it makes sense. He was actually behind everything, you know, working for the FBI.
Yeah, he was in the direction.
Yeah, I guess they're admitting their wrongdoing right now. Can we say that on YouTube? I'm not really sure.
I don't know.
But, well, the me asking that probably just flagged their AI system to go back and check that, I bet. Mm-hmm. So the ridiculous nature of this. Also, remember, none of them, there were no armed individuals. Okay, now Proud Boys is like a pseudo, like a militia organization kind of thing. You know, no one was carrying their rifles or anything. Although on January 6th, we were told that there were people armed with guns and stuff there. There weren't. And so he organized people to go to a protest unarmed. And apparently some of the Proud Boys members were some of the first people to tear down the police barricades. And so therefore, at his direction, although there's no proof that he told people to go in there and riot, he did text them. I think he said something like, don't effing leave, something like that, after everything had already started. That was about it. So he gets this seditious conspiracy, obstruction of justice, and they added a terrorism upcharge to it. Now, this is a terrorism upcharge for a person who didn't even have any weapons and who was not there and gets 22 years in prison because he texted some people once they were there not to leave. I mean, literally, dude, like, this is it.
That's the basic. The basic principle of the United States is not innocent until proven guilty. It's just automatically guilty by association.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now, he probably would have got 50 years if he was white, unfortunately, or I guess fortunately, you know, because then he would be even more guilty.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
what I'm wondering,
they're still putting brown people in prison.
I know.
You know,
sucks. And the other white guys got less prison sentences, actually. So racism still in the justice system.
Yeah.
The crazy part, so if they had this grand plan to go in there and disrupt the proceedings, like from the get-go, that's what they're going to do, then I wonder why did they do all of these people separately? Why didn't they just use a RICO charge against them, since they were conspiring as a criminal organization to go in and overturn the election or disrupt the official proceedings? And then you could say, well, he was the mastermind behind the whole thing. There was this big conspiracy to get all of them to go in. And unfortunately, they didn't use that, and I think because that's total BS, and they just felt like he's the leader of the Proud Boys, so they have to charge him. They have to get 22 years out of him, and this is what you get. Now, we don't agree with January 6th. We don't. I think it's a terrible date. I think we should just go straight from January 5th to January 7th. I've never liked the date.
It's like the 13th floor in a hotel.
Yeah. Step
right over it.
Exactly. Yeah. So we've never agreed with January 6th.
Yeah.
At all. In fact, there are several other dates that I'm against. But anyway, we'll talk about those at a later time. This is what I think. There are two things going on. One, this is what happens when you try to stand up against your government. All right. Look at these guys. They got 22 years. One of them got 17. Some got 18. A bunch of years in prison.
We talk about this in like third world countries about how they use political power and jail and all that, you know, to jail these people. And we talk about how horrible that is in all these other countries. And it's happening right in front of our nose.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is that
they're making an example out of the leader. Just like,
they are making an example.
So you're aware if you, you know, lead a group and that group ends up doing something.
Like breaking a window at the Capitol or staying in a building that you're not supposed to be in. We're not really
20 years in prison.
We're not concerned like if you burned buildings in the middle of downtown in some big city or anything.
Well, if you do it for the right reasons.
Yeah. That's the problem. And the problem here is that they were against the government. And this is what you get. The other thing is, the more of these cases they get and the more convictions they get, the more January 6th becomes like a legal insurrection and the legal playbooks because of all these things that happened. And therefore, the higher chance they have of being able to use this 14th Amendment thing against Donald Trump. And so if no one goes down for a seditious conspiracy and plotting to overthrow or whatever, if no one goes down for that, then that means it didn't happen. And therefore, they can't use the 14th Amendment thing against Trump. And so they've got to get these people actually going down for the thing that they're saying happened. And then they get him for the mastermind behind the whole thing, just like they got this guy for being the mastermind for what the Proud Boys did. So they are possibly still building this towards something crazy.
And as Carl from the live chat said, it builds, you know, case law and precedent. So that could be, definitely could be an element to this.
Let's go to something funny to end this. I want to let you know, now we're a little too far away, but there's going to be, brought to you by the Alliance for Human Services and Highland Park and Family Focus, there's going to be a poverty simulation event on Saturday, this coming Saturday, Charlie. Now, if you have time, and you need to make sure you plan that well, because this poverty simulation event is from 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. at Highland Park.
Is this like what the Christians used to do with Judgment Day, you know?
Judgment Day.
Simulate heaven and hell and, you know, the crash.
Yeah, it's just
you
like
never
that.
Know what's going to happen, you know?
So let us know what this announcement from the City of Highland Park says, Chuck.
All right, they say the City of Highland Park is partnering with the Alliance for Human Services, Family Focus, Marine Township, and the Highland Park Community Foundation to host a poverty simulation event to increase residents' understanding and awareness of what it is like to live in poverty in Lake County. The simulation will be held on Saturday. We already talked about that. Participants in this immersive experience will begin to experience what a month and poverty feels like in 2.5 hours. Just the situations in which they do not have enough resources and are forced to make difficult choices that can negatively impact them and their families. The outcome is increased awareness of the need for resources to support those living in poverty and to create a more resilient health, human, and education sector in our local area. Participation is free, but registration is required. Why would they make it free?
I don't know.
If it's poverty simulation.
Well, I guess, like, I mean,
basically, you shouldn't even be...
Well, that's where the poverty simulation starts, because they know you wouldn't be able to pay for it.
Right, you shouldn't be able to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's why it's free.
So what are they going to do? I mean, like, hey, can I get...
It's 2.5 hours.
Like, can I get some food? And they're like, no, can't have any food.
Just make sure you eat breakfast beforehand and make lunch reservations at noon afterwards, and you'll be good.
And just clear the air, we're not laughing at anybody that's in poverty. Nate and I have both been in poverty for many years of our lives, okay? Like, it's not saying that people that are in poverty don't struggle, because, you know, back in the day, they had to make some tough decisions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, do I eat, like, lunch and dinner, or, like, do I save some of my lunch for dinner because I want to eat lunch tomorrow, too?
I never had any food insecurities.
I was never insecure about it.
We were in a position where we had to choose between mowing the yard and shooting up heroin. And so, no, we weren't in that either. But it was a trailer park, so I'm sure I felt that that was what a lot of people were going through, a lot of my neighbors. And that's what the neighborhood felt like. I wonder if you get like a badge after. Is it like an escape room kind of thing where you get to take a picture outside of it? So you get the thing that says, like, I survived poverty. You know, you get like a badge or whatever, and they'll post it on the website. I don't know. I want to see people taking pictures from this thing, and
oh gosh,
this is great. Here's just what happens when we've got it so good as a society, and not that everyone has it so good. We've done so well that we have to simulate, that create an immersive poverty experience for people for 2.5 hours so they can feel like they did something, you know, like they seen a thing or two after that, you know, for this purely fabricated setup event.
All right, folks, that does it for Liberty at Night with Nate and Chuck on the Free Talk Live Network for this Tuesday. We will be right back, just as we are every Tuesday, or you can listen to us every day of the week on your favorite podcast app.
Donald Trump warned America. The U.S. dollar is under attack, and it's becoming less and less valuable by the day. Hyperinflation and speculation is killing your retirement. Don't leave your money sitting in cash. It's time you diversified and protected your future with physical precious metals. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000 and get your free digital dollar survival kit and learn how you could get up to $1,000 in free silver today. Call Advantage Gold now at 800-900-8000 to get your free digital dollar survival kit. And you may qualify for $1,000 in free silver. Advantage Gold is the number one rated gold and silver company in America. Your future is precious. Protect it today when you call Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000 now.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Check with your financial advisor before investing.
That's 800-900-8000.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.